Actually, first suggestion come from Andrew, but I'll give talk in physics anyway. So, but maybe for this group, I very brief overview what is going on in low energy physics, non-related to dark matter and related to dark matter. Actually, any new physics may be related to dark matter. So this title is kind of very general, but specifically, it's about test of unification theories, including what parity violation to us, So, parity violation in atoms and molecules, time reversal violation, electric dipole moments, again, in atoms and molecules. And if I already mentioned this, if there will be time and desire to listen, I may say what is the links of these experiments in violation of fundamental symmetries and dark matter. Okay, so it's kind of things which everybody knows. Parity violation in atoms comes from Z boson exchange, and what is measured is weak charge. Sorry, don't have a point of view. So this is just weak charge. In the standard model, it's mainly neutrons, but there is also proton contributions. Parity violation increases very rapidly with nuclear charge as Z cube. So some density of wave function increases, derivative of density increases, altogether very fast increase of parity violating effects with nuclear charge. So all these events are around heavy atoms. There are fantastic results achieved by experimentalists. So it was first confirmation of existence of parity violation in neutral currents comes from atoms. It was before Slack experiment. It was in my home institution in Novosibirsk. It was Barkov and Zolotarev result who discovered parity violation. It was very nice confirmation of a standard model. After this confirmation was repeated by Slack, Weinberg, Salam, and Glashow, we awarded Nobel Prize. So at some early stage of a standard model, atomic experiments played a crucial role in establishing of a standard model. But what prevented further progress was insufficient atomic theory, because the first experiments were done with very complicated systems, and the simplest system of us was cesium atom with one electron traveling about closed shells, where really good theoretical accuracy could be achieved. So, and even theoretical inaccuracy pushed experimentalists to work with simple systems from a point of atomic many-body theory, like cesium atom, which is some noble gas core plus one electron and so on. So it's not even experimental consideration. Experiment was good. It was a theory which kind of delayed further progress, because the aim was to search for new physics. But and again, there was at least one simple system like cesium atom, where accuracy was very high. At like one electron above closed shells, with number of electrons about closed shells. So for some time, all the events in this area were around a simplest system, like system with one electron above closed shells. So far, I just skip all the history. So far, there is agreement with the standard model. The story was complicated. There was Carl Wieman, you know, his famous Nobel laureate, once claimed there is disagreement with the standard model. But it was very kind of strange story. We gave accuracy 1%, and Carl Wieman said, no, theoretical accuracy is 0.4%. So 2.5 times better, which is very unusual. Why experimenters may say theoretical accuracy is not good enough, yeah? But when they say it's better than theorists think, this is something unusual, yeah? And motivation was the following. We predicted usual electromagnetic amplitudes, and there was disagreement, some 0.9% with one of the electromagnetic transitions. And the experimenters remeasured and found that actual agreement is 0.1%. So theory was much better. And because the agreement with the experiment was dramatically improved, Wieman concluded that theoretical accuracy is better, and he was very interested at that time. It was just before his award of Nobel Prize, so it looks like he found disagreement with the standard model, physics beyond standard model and parity violating experiments. But later it was found, if you really want to have very high accuracy, we need to consider all corrections. And one of the biggest ones, for example, was QED in a strong field. Because cesium atom is sufficiently heavy that alpha is 0.4. So So nuclear charge times fine structure constant is 0.4. So it's not so non-relativistic system. And you cannot treat QED correction as plane waves, as people usually do. They use free grains functions. It's incorrect. There are corrections due to strong field. And this correction was pretty large. And it's actually, when really we realized we needed better accuracy, this correction was calculated, and agreement with the standard model was restored. So far, parity violation only gives limits on new physics. It is not a discovery of new physics. It gives you some limits on new physics. And it's still valid limit. I mean, even after all the successes of super collider and so on, there is still room for parity violation in atoms because there are particles like low mass Z boson, not some super heavy one like some TeV range and some MeV range. If there are some extra Z boson of low mass, the most best place to look for them is parity violation in atoms. So it's still important for test of a standard model, but it's kind of really new physics. It's something which does not fit into some supersymmetry models or something like that. This is especially for atomic and molecular experiments. There is still some things to do. But from a point of further experiments, experiments continues. There is one group who started again experiment in cesium. And also there are experiments with cesium-like system, but heavier one. There is atom which also alkaline, like francium, which one electron above closed shell, radium plus. There's still relatively simple system for theory because it's one electron travels far away from the electron core, so you can calculate many body corrections relatively accurately. But because effect very rapidly increases with nuclear charge, effect will be 15 times bigger. So it's a hope to get a better result just because effects are bigger.
Just to clarify, for some of these transitions considered, the effect is even larger than that than the cesium experiment because of cancellations in the S to S transition, right? Like the
SD transition effect's a little bit
right,
bigger.
Yeah.
It's bigger, yeah. But it's not like order of magnitude bigger, but it's bigger.
Some
like several. If I remember correctly, 4 times bigger, something like that.
Can I clarify? Like, I understand why the standard model parity violation effect scales is Z cubed. But these beyond the standard model parity violation, hypothetical ones like lead, light Z boson, but those also scale as Z cubed?
No.
I mean, so should we be looking at hydrogen? I mean, what atom?
Yeah, it's possible because we only for get the limits, I'll show you later. We used existing experiments. But of course, it may change the paradigm because if it's light, it doesn't sit on the nucleus, and so it doesn't have so rapid increase with the nuclear charge. Of course, it depends on the mass of the particle. What range of typical distances are important. So, roughly speaking, what is distance determines the effective charge, yeah?
Sure.
If you go further away, potential is bigger, so you don't have a so big increase with the nuclear charge, because nuclear charge is screened by electrons. So you're absolutely right. If you consider light particles, where increase will not be so fast. So you may look for simpler, easier, lower mass systems. If it has any advantages, of course. So high mass, well, high Z is still good, but maybe low mass may be competitive, which will not be for.
How important are nuclear uncertainties?
Nuclear uncertainties, for this experiment, no. For single isotope experiments, nuclear uncertainties are not important because, you see, in non-relativistic physics, there is no sensitivity at all because it's conserving charge. Because it's vector charge of a nucleus.
Oh, it's vector on the nucleus.
Vector on the nucleus, axial on electron, yeah. In non-relativistic physics, wave function tends to constant, and because it's constant, nuclear charge does not matter at all. So dependence on nuclear charge appears due to relativistic corrections. For cesium, all uncertainties from nucleus is about 0.2% or even smaller. It's so-called neutron skin because neutron distribution is not very well known. How big mistake it produces. So and cesium is 0.2%. With overall accuracy 0.5%. It's probably much better now because people learn more and more about this neutron skin from theory, from measurements in other systems. But if you go to heavier systems, it may be more important. For example, for francium and radio plus, it's already 0.6%. So you need to really to put some, make some input about neutron physics, for example, how big is this neutron skin and so on. It's not a big problem, but for single isotope, it's all not so important. But I'll show next page where it is maybe important. This one electron above closed shell are good theoretical system, but you can do much better. Because it was the idea from the very beginning of parity violation to use some closed levels of opposite parity. Because it's parity, it's perturbative effect, so if you have closed levels, you have much bigger parity violation. Yeah? You know, some perturbation theory, energy denominator is small, it's good. But these systems are complicated. So, do we really wasted nearly all the periodic table for this purpose? Actually, it's not. Because you can do the following. You can consider parity violating effects on different isotopes. Electron wave function is practically the same. So, ratio of parity violating effects is not sensitive. Is not sensitive to electron wave functions. Because wave functions are the same, and you just measure ratio of weak charges. And what is interesting also, it's a complementary experiment. You sensitive to different combinations of interaction constant. So it does not repeat in its value of single charge measurements, because in single charge measurements you measure sum of weak charges, proton and neutron. Here you measure ratio. In terms of parameters, it's just orthogonal combination of the parameters. In here, nuclear problem is important because, okay, if you don't know neutron distribution and difference in neutron number is not so big, it's maybe 14. It's the best cases. Some rare earth atoms have 14 difference in neutron numbers. So, because it's a relative change of a number of neutrons is not 100%, it's kind of suppression. And in this background, nuclear uncertainty may be visible. But still, there was some work that we did, which showed that it's not so bad because when you add neutrons, neutron distribution of a core practically doesn't change. So major part of errors cancels out. So you still can test standard model and search for new physics in these kind of experiments. So it's still competitive method. We avoid atomic uncertainty. You still deal with the nuclear uncertainty, but it's not that bad. And experiments, it's unpublished result. The first experiments with a terbium atom, which has closed levels and very big effects, 100 times bigger than cesium, they appeared already. So there is a first result on this area when people test physics beyond standard model in this chain of isotope measurements. It was Butker group in Mainz who produced first results in this area. Not published yet, but they sent me a picture. Or maybe it appears. It already appeared in the archive, sorry. So, and finally, Ennepel moment, which is not test of a standard model, but it's mostly test of new physics. Because spin-dependent effects are dominated by nuclear Ennepel moment. Because nuclear Ennepel moment is a vector, so it produces nuclear spin-dependent effects. And this is an interesting example. When higher order effect in alpha, in fine structure constant, bigger than low order effect. Usually we get used to in electrodynamics, you go to higher order, effects are small. Here it's other way around. Because smallness of fine structure constant is compensated by large number of nucleons, 8^23. But a standard model constant is small for accidental region. It's sine squared of Weinberg angle is 1/4, standard model effect vanishes. So this not a test of standard model, it's mostly a test of a nuclear physics, parity violating nuclear forces. So because of this, I just skip this part. And go to next point. Now there is enhancement of parity violating effects in molecules, because molecules have very close opposite parity levels. You know, in quantum mechanics, distance between opposite parity levels is inversely proportional to mass. It's just scale. H squared over mass, distance squared. It's just dimension, yeah? So bigger mass, smaller interval between opposite parity levels. And molecules have very close rotation levels of opposite parity. So molecules have strongly enhanced parity violating effects, but there is kind of theory that due to time reversal invariance, you can only measure nuclear spin dependent effects, it's not a weak charge. So again, molecular experiments are complementary to on atomic experiments because you measure different interaction, nuclear spin dependent interaction. But effects are much bigger. And the experiments are in progress now in several laboratories on this topic. Now finally, again, it's not high energy physics here. If nucleus is deformed, you also have tensor weak forces because it's kind of weak. You can measure weak quadrupole moment, especially in molecules, because a weak quadrupole moment has different selection rules. It's delta J equal to 2. So it especially enhancing molecules which we used to measure electron-electric dipole moment before. So the same molecule may be used to measure weak quadrupole moment for the first time and to measure neutron distribution, what we needed for neutron stars equation of state or for weak interactions and so on. Okay. So that's all what I wanted to say about parity violation. If any questions, I'm happy to answer. If not, I'm going to physics beyond standard model. Okay. The other direction in atomic physics, which started by Ramsey probably many, many years ago, is measurement of electric dipole moments, which are forbidden by time reversal invariance or by CP invariance, if you assume CPT theorem. So it's search for CPT CP violating interaction in atomic physics. There is, of course, story of neutron dipole moment, but I'll speak about atomic and nuclear effects. And what is interesting here, that in nuclear, electric dipole moment may be much bigger than in neutron. And the reason is for nuclear, we have tree diagram. And for neutron, it's a loop diagram. So you have some enhancement of some number of pi and some other parameters. So dominating effects here is neutron, nucleon-nucleon interaction. So these experiments, atomic experiments, we do not repeat neutron electric dipole moment. We give us a complementary information. And there is additional enhancement in deformed nuclei. There are some collective effects where maybe effect may be in addition to this factor of 40, which consists of pi and some other parameters, there is additional enhancement in nuclei which are deformed. So if neutron time and parity violating moments may be nuclear time and parity violating moments may be much bigger than neutron electric dipole moment. So this gives us new opportunities, and also atoms are stable, neutron is unstable.
Sorry, and there is what? Nucleus?
Nucleon.
This. So that would be like
proton neutron.
Neutron exchanging a pi, and then you have it.
Yeah. So again.
Well, this line is only a neutron, you say.
This is neutron, yeah.
Neutron, okay.
Well, maybe proton, but proton limits are not that good yet. The order is weaker. Okay, but again, it's a complementary experiment because we probe different interactions. And so, but model independent conclusion is because here it's tree diagram, here it's a loop diagram, and dominating contribution is always pi exchange in this system. So we have some advantage of a nuclei. This is advantage. Also stability of atoms. But there is a disadvantage here, which is called shift theorem, which is unfortunately, electric dipole moment nucleus cannot be measured in a neutral system. So, electric dipole moment may exist, but you still don't see it. And there is a very simple explanation. If you apply electric field to neutral atom, it does not accelerate neutral atom. Yeah, but nucleus is charged. Yeah. So if any electric field penetrates to nucleus, it would be accelerated, yeah. So we come to contradiction. It means that there is no electric field which can penetrate to nucleus. Yeah. Because nucleus is not accelerated. It means you apply field, but it's useless because it's completely screened by electrons. nucleus stay at rest. If there is no electric field, electric dipole moment of a nucleus doesn't interact. And so you can't measure it. If it is a charged ion, if it is ion, it's not the case anymore because nucleus is accelerated, but there is suppression because nuclear charge is Z, ion charge is Zi. So to have the same acceleration, you have electric fields by this ratio, Z ion by Z smaller. So if it's singly ionized atom, it doesn't help much. It's still a weak field. In molecules, suppression is even bigger because of a big molecular mass. So to have equal acceleration, field of the nucleus will be even smaller. There is a possibility to go around this problem if you consider oscillating electric field. So there is effect proportional to frequency squared. If there is oscillating electric field, so field penetrates the nucleus, so you can measure electric dipole moment, but it's proportional to frequency squared, and this is polarizability of your atom. So I just derived this formula recently, some few weeks ago. So you still can do it, and there is experiment with variable field, which is done by Nobel laureate Eric Carnell, but he has not considered this effect. He just uses ion, so he cannot use static field. He uses oscillating field for a different reason. So basically, it's a problem with neutral system unless you have oscillating electric field instead of.
For his system, have you plugged in the numbers? I don't know if F is like 250 kilohertz or
something. It's still very small for system.
Still very, okay.
Yeah, still very small.
And your, I mean, F could be anything up to an optical frequency. I mean, what's the, I'm trying to envision, are you, is this like a, I mean, there'll be somehow in my mind I can't connect Eric's 250 kilohertz to an infrared laser, but F squared would obviously be,
You can go to resonance, you can have field which is much bigger than external field. This is a very interesting situation. Because this is polarizability, it has resonances.
Electronic resonance.
Yes, if you go to electronic resonances, the field is electronic field, which is 10 to the 9 volt per centimeter. Yeah? Huge field.
Yeah.
There is electron oscillating, there's radio oscillation. The electron oscillates from one state to another. You have huge oscillating field, which may be many of this bigger than external field, but you need to go to resonance, specifically to resonance.
This means your nucleons flipping over
No, I don't know, because I have not thought about experiments. It's probably pretty complicated. Can you measure electric dipole moments? You need to kind of cancel out all these oscillations. Yes, you need to, when you do measurements, you need to flip your sensitivity with the same frequency as external field, so it doesn't average. In principle, it's possible for small frequencies. I'm not sure it's possible to optical frequencies. But you can just think about this. It's just very recent result. So if it's possible, you can have a huge field on the nucleus. Because again, if you have a radio oscillation, scale is not external field, it's frequency of oscillation depends on the field. Scale is electron field, which is much bigger than external field. Okay, just picture, you probably don't see it. I just put it in the last moment, yeah. So this is very strange picture, how field is screened inside atom. It's not like Debye screen, but you have external field and monotonous decrease. It's because of an electronic structure, you may have field inside atom much bigger than external field, even of resonance. But it's not on the nucleus. Okay. So what people really do, because we still use mostly static field, how they can measure nucleon-nucleon parity and time reversal violating interaction? The idea was firstly suggested by Schiff. He told if nucleus has finite size, it does not mean that field in each point is zero. It's some integrated field is zero. So integrated force on the nucleus is zero, but field is not zero in each point. Basically, you need to go to higher multiple. Instead of electric dipole, you go to higher multiple, and effect will be not zero. It may be electric octupole moment, which also violates time and parity, but the beta effect comes from so-called Schiff moment. Schiff never calculated it, but we did. And shift moment is kind of what remains from electric dipole moment after screening. It has extra power of nuclear radius squared. So of course it's a suppression because nuclear radius is small, but it's not zero. And when you calculate actual effect in atoms and molecules, there is enhancement like factor of z squared, because its electron wave function in the nucleus is enhanced. We have here a derivative of electron wave function. So it's not that bad, but there is a significant suppression. And what happens? What is this beast shift moment? If you do some simple calculation, you immediately see that shift moment is electric field inside nucleus directed along nuclear spin. Yeah, so what happens?
Sigma dot E if it was spin half?
Yeah, yeah. So you see, it's just electric field along nuclear spin. So weak interaction perturbs proton wave function, you get extra field, which is directed along nuclear spin. So this picture looks extremely simple, yeah? But it violates two conservation laws. Because electric field is a usual vector, and spin is pseudo-vector. So this picture violates parity. And another time reversal, because if you reverse time, electric field does not change, spin changes. So this simple picture, electric field along spin, violates two conservation laws, so we really need some time and parity violating forces to do it. So if there is electric field inside the nucleus, it polarizes atom and produces electric dipole moment of atom or molecule. After that, it's easy, yeah? Any electric field polarizes atom, even if it's inside the nucleus. So you have electric dipole moment, which can be measured. Okay. There is additional enhancement, I don't want to go into details, in nucleus with octupole deformation, because it has doublet of opposite parity levels, and shift moment is collective. So there is close opposite parity levels, like in molecules, like rotational levels. And you have big enhancement of a shift moment in nucleus with octupole deformation, because of close levels of opposite parity and collective nature of shift moment in these systems. This makes a new direction of experiment in this area with radium, and experiment was done, but these nuclei with octupole deformation are unstable, so far there is no big achievement. We still need to work on it and explore this enhancement. Okay, anyway, there are plenty of experiments now trying to measure electric dipole moment, but so far we got only limits, and supersymmetry model is probably in big trouble because they cornered it by this measurement. So if electric dipole moments now are two orders of magnitude smaller than in natural scale of supersymmetry, but it has three parameters, so it's still alive, but it's cornered. I mean, parameter space is it's a small area only. But there are many experiments in this direction. And so far, the result is zero, so it's only exclusion of some models rather than really new theory.
What is eta in
the... Sorry?
Eta?
It's a strength of nucleon-nucleon interaction in terms of Fermi constant. So it's just convenient to normalize supersymmetry, super weak interaction in terms of usual weak interaction. So it's a dimensionless constant ratio of time and parity violating interaction to usual weak interaction. For standard model, it's about 10 to the minus 9, few units 10 to the minus 9. But this is why the standard model results are very small, because actually they comes in a second order. In standard model, it comes in a second order in weak interaction constant, in Fermi constant. Yeah, but if you have some supersymmetry, it's first order. So natural scale for eta will be 1 times some product of some angles. It should be small to get a suppression. So practically in any models beyond standard model, this constant eta is some products of some angles. It does not contain any weak interaction constant anymore. So I mean Fermi constant, which is pretty small for heavy particles. So again, effect increases with nuclear charge, and there is additional enhancement in the nuclear vacuole deformation. So this is it's probably incomplete picture of current experiments searching for electric dipole moments of neutral system in atoms. There is another way around. Instead of electric dipole moment, some shift moment, and electric dipole moment, you can consider magnetic multipoles. Magnetic multipole may be magnetic quadrupole moment. It also violates time and parity. Magnetic interaction in atoms is weaker than electric interaction, but there is no screening. So there is no screening, it means altogether the effect of magnetic quadrupole moment is bigger than effect of shift moment. So it's another possibility where to go if you want to improve accuracy on time and parity violating interactions, to measure magnetic quadrupole moment. Why it hasn't been measured up to now? Because you need paramagnetic molecules. To have magnetic interaction, you need non-zero spin of electrons, unpaired electrons in the system. So such atoms like mercury are not suitable. You need to go to paramagnetic atoms, and accuracy in paramagnetic atoms are not as good as in mercury, because existence of non-zero electron angular momentum produces some systematic effects. And again, there is collective enhancement in deformed nuclei, so effect may be pretty big. But it's a proposal for future experiments. No, nobody is measuring its magnetic quadrupole moment so far. But I just repeat for experimentalists, it should be paramagnetic molecule or paramagnetic atom. So it's not the same system which we used to measure electric dipole nuclear dipole interaction before. Okay, so the best thing is probably molecules. They are better than atoms because they have very close levels of opposite parity. And I even mentioned, because I read in discussion here, that Andrew proposed these molecules. Yes, which nobody measured before. And there are molecules where experiments are currently now. This is molecules of Eric Carnell and Jun Yi group, where measurements are possible. Electric dipole moment is a completely different story. Shift theorem is also valid for electron-electric dipole moment. In non-relativistic physics, it's unobservable in neutral system. But here, the story happens to be very interesting because instead of separation, we have enhancement. Because electron is relativistic in heavy atoms, so this simple electrostatic consideration is not correct because magnetic forces and small distances are very big. They're not suppressed because electron is ultra-relativistic. So instead of separation, you have very big enhancement. So this, just analytically try to find out what kind of formula you have here. It's Z cubed times relativistic factor. So even if effect is zero in non-relativistic physics, in relativistic physics, in relativistic case, it's enhancement. Maybe enhanced three orders of Newton atom. Even bigger enhancement is in molecules because of very close rotational levels. So there is molecular mass over electron mass, another enhancement. So we have very close opposite parity levels in molecules, and this gives you huge enhancement of electron-electric dipole moment there. This is why people move to molecule. All current experiments measuring electron-electric dipole moments are carried out with molecules, and there is a real breakthrough in sensitivity in this area recently. So now, what is the connection to dark matter here? I already showed this picture. Any interaction which produces electric dipole moments is mixing of opposite parity orbital. So you have spherically symmetric orbital and admixture of opposite parity orbitals. So altogether, we change distribution of the density of electrons or nucleons, and you have electron-dipole moments induced. Of course, it may be internal interaction in nucleus or atoms, or it may be external field, like dark matter field or axion field, which mixes opposite parity levels and produces electric-dipole moments. Here, it's a similar to application of external electric field. You apply electric field, yeah, it polarizes atoms. Here you apply axion field and polarizes nucleus or atoms and produce electric dipole moment. I simply very briefly repeat what is the relation of a research for dark matter and electric dipole moments. Yeah? So all what we did before may be kind of redone in new experiments, but because axion field is oscillating, you will have oscillating electric dipole moments instead of permanent, constant electric dipole moment. So you can do molecules, the same system, but search for oscillating effects. You can do atoms, and so on. I don't know, should I consider, because I already told about this, but not all the people were present.
You were not present. You shouldn't, I can discuss it with you privately. We shouldn't just discuss the whole talk just for me, although I'm very interested. But.
Okay. So it's up to you. I may continue. If you have enough, I finish. It's a very brief overview of what is going on now. But after that, basically, the general idea, we use axion field instead of internal interactions. Yeah, so it polarizes atoms, polarizes molecules, and produces oscillating electric dipole moments. And oscillating parity violating effects also. There are first results obtained in this way. And because effect which we consider linear in interaction strength with axions, because it's just effect of external fields. Like if you apply electric field, you have effect first power in electric charge. Here you have first power in electron interaction. Because it's first order effect instead of some higher orders in different experiments, you may have a very big increase in sensitivity. So this is more or less clear what is the idea, and details we may discuss in private. Okay, so it's a brief overview.
Anyone have any questions or comments?
I have a kind of a general comment with the previous slide.
Yeah.
So the thing that keeps me up at night, following what I said before, is actually the whole chain of things. And I don't necessarily have a good feeling for atomic physics, but for other things, you know, this involves a lot of steps, right? Going from quarks to nucleons to nuclei. So I'm always concerned that somehow, you know, beyond just doing some simple things, you know, when you're just trying to establish, you know, constraints, you actually have a measurement, and then you start arguing whether this is actually genuinely measuring the fundamental CP violating phase, or there's some kind of interplay with all the steps you have to go to get to the.
I'm happy to comment on this because it's really important. There is a big difference between atomic physics, nuclear physics, and particle physics. Yeah. Atomic physics is a precise science. Just general conclusion, yeah. In atomic physics, we have a predictive power. We predicted spectra of atoms before they were measured. For example, francium, unstable element, spectra we are not known. We happen to predict 4 digits in ionization potential, in spite of its many body system. Because why one electron, why this system with one electron above closed shell are so good? Because you have mainly central field, and correlation between external electrons and internal electrons are small. If you have many electron atoms, its accuracy is not so good, but it's reasonable, 10%. In worst case, 50%. But it has a high predictive power. Okay, so atomic physics, if it's extra step involving atomic physics, it's not a problem, never. But nuclear physics may be a problem, and particle physics may be a problem. Nuclear physics, you don't have a good central field like an atom. It's kind of a live system, some collective modes, you know. So nuclear physics prediction are not that good. this may cause a problem. Yeah, and particle physics, of course, if it's QED, it's okay, or electrolytic, it's okay. But as soon as you go in low energy QCD, you know, there are always assumptions. So in this case, nucleon interaction is better than a loop, because it's a tree level. But loop, nobody knows what is actually accuracy of this loop. So result changed 2 times, nobody is surprised. Yeah, so this is a general argument. But on one hand, so it's again this argument which tells that this root, nuclear root, or some nuclear TP violation, or nucleon electric dipole, is not that good. But on the other hand, so electron, from theory point of view, electron root may be better. But the problem is electron, in standard model, for example, its electric dipole moment is so small, you have no hope to get it. Here, in principle, you miss only 5 orders of magnitude. Okay, in another 100 years it will be measured. Yeah, an electron, I don't know, is ever possible to reach accuracy needed to detect standard model effects, yes? So it's only search for physics beyond standard model, where maybe electron-electric dipole moment is not so small.
So the measurement does it depend on the theoretical prediction? Because one of the things I'm going to talk about tomorrow is actually how, to some extent, you could say that underestimating some hadronic uncertainties gave the impression for the experimentalist that the theoretical prediction was more accurate than it actually was, to the level where, you know, it was difficult for them to find a signal in the first place. So again, I don't know enough about these systems to say whether the problem is going to arise when we want to interpret the bounds, or let's say we measure a value, then the problem going to arise of trying to relate fundamental parameters, or even establishing the bounds depends on some theoretical input that there might be some uncertainties there that we have to be careful about.
No, but see, there are always theoretical uncertainty. Now, after that, it's a level of optimism. Because
I don't know, I understand there are, but I'm saying in terms of the parts that you feel are less accurate. So you're saying atomic physics calculations, it's unlikely that's going to cause any problems.
It might be good to break this down into like kind of 2 or 3 different things, so that there's, you know, Victor has on the right the electron EDM, on the left there's nuclear EDM type CP violating effects. And then there's the other question of, you know, something is measured. So then, like, what's happening there? Do we need atomic physics to understand the measurement in that, you know, there's some kind of CP violation, right? And so I think for the third one, the third case of just the measurement, like you're flipping some signals or doing some optical pumping and seeing if there's an EDM effect, I think that's just going to show up.
So you don't depend on any theoretical.
That's right. Maybe you should just
maybe it's just to the question.
Measurement can just stand on its own.
No, measurements, of course. If you measure electric dipole moment, the most probable outcome, you'll get Nobel Prize anyway. Yeah. In spite of all theoretical uncertainties, yes? Because it's not the experimentalist problem, how to interpret them. But the fact it's found, it's great, yeah. But after that, when you get limits, the situation is different. If you don't see effect, the situation is different. Because you need to get the limit, you need a specific number, And here...
I mean, we could, even just along these lines, if we just focus in on just the electron EDM, so the cleaner, the cleanest kind of measurement, the uncertainty in the electric field inside the thorium monoxide molecules, like, I don't know, 10%, that number moves around. Just because the theory for figuring out that field is difficult. Okay, so the absolute magnitude of an electron EDM depends on that. But whether you've seen one,
no, that's good news. That's kind of one of my questions.
Okay, yeah. I mean, the theory for the electron. So I'll just the electron EDM. The theory for what that field is helps you say, I want to use this molecule. Okay, so I can't. You know, on the left side, the nuclear stuff. That's more complicated in terms of.
But again, it's more complicated, but it's complementary.
Yeah,
and if you see a standard model as an example, you need to go this route, because in nuclear sector, CP violation is much bigger. It can't, so in electron sector, it's practically negligible in a standard model. So it doesn't mean you, that both of them are important, if you really want to understand what's going on.
One other point more towards the left side, towards the nuclear effects, and Victor's kind of said this, is that the measurements over there really, you know, would benefit the most from mini systems, right? So a mercury, UDM, hafnium, fluoride, plus the right isotope shift moment measurement to orthogonalize it a little bit.
Yeah. Because we don't know anything, it's better to do all we can do. It increases our chances to understand what's going on. There's no need to repeat, because everybody knows is that there should be source of CP violation beyond standard model, because you need to explain baryogenesis. Yeah. So, and baryogenesis mostly strong interaction problem. Again, you go to left side. More to left side than to the right, but it's model dependent. In a supersymmetry principle, they're comparable. If you have a specific model, you can compare these two routes. If you don't have a model, this left side has a preference.
So the left side really is better at addressing.
It's more closely related, probably, to Big Bang nuclear synthesis problem. But again, it's so model dependent. Both of them are important.
What questions? Okay, let's thank Victor.
Okay, what I gave here, it's extremely brief and probably hard to understand introduction. Yes, because I was invited to give a talk, it will be talk at 3:30 in physics, yes? On Thursday. Yeah, it will be a normal talk with a slow pace.
And what's the subject going to be?
This one.
Yes.
Yes, because this was not planned. It was a spontaneous suggestion to present this. I just give you a flavor of what's going on. But a real talk will be on Thursday.
I'll see you
We can forward it.
Exactly.
Okay, if someone is interested, they're very welcome to come and ask detailed questions.
Okay, great. That's it for today.
Thank you.